It's All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan, and this is our Plus One podcast. Today, we've got a unique conversation between singer-songwriter Sharon Van Etten and Mimi Parker of the band Low. Sharon's a longtime fan of the band Low, and she wanted to pick Mimi's brain, not about Low's latest album, Ones and Sixes, but about what it's like to be married, to have children, and live the life on the road as a touring musician. So I recorded a conversation. Sharon's in New York City, Mimi's at WSCN in Duluth, Minnesota, and I'm in Washington, D.C. We begin with Mimi's description of touring with her daughter, Hollis.
Honestly, for me, when I have kids, it's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Because when you're on tour, you eat whenever you can eat. You just kind of work with the situation. You know, kids, they want 3 square meals a day. And so you're constantly, you know, stopping for food. And
kids.
I know, kids, man. You know, but we took them to China with us this summer. We actually had 4 shows in China.
Wow.
For clarity, Hollis is what, 15? 14?
Hollis is 15, yeah. Cyrus is 11.
Okay.
And that was really great. For one thing, we had really nice hotels and everything was set up and we had a guide with us the whole time. And so that was kind of an ideal situation.
I can't even imagine traveling with kids. I feel like having had 4 band members and and like a sound person, you know, you're traveling, you're a family
yeah.
already.
Yeah, you're kind of, maybe you're already taking care of those guys, huh?
That's right. They are the kids.
But I can't imagine, especially being married to your bandmate and mm-hmm. that changing the dynamic and maybe changing your role if they came along. Like, how does that change the band? You know?
Yeah, no, it does. It, you know, when it's just us, I'm still married to, you know, to one of the members, but there's the marriage and the band.
Right.
And honestly, they are kind of one and the same thing at this point. But yeah, when the kids come in, it's a whole new, you know, I'm mom again. And mom is a lot more work than just drummer in the band.
Yes.
Could you just talk about the very first taking your kids out on the, I mean, or leaving them for the first time, whichever the case was, and then if it was
right.
leaving them for the first time, what that's like, if it's taking them, what that was like, or I guess it was just one at that.
Yeah, the first time, so when Hollis came along and it was within 10 months, we were on the road again, and we took her with us everywhere. It wasn't even really a consideration of, you know, leaving her home. So we hired a nanny. You know, our really good friend Scott was our nanny. And I think if we'd really thought it through, we probably never would have done it. But we didn't really think it through. We just kind of gathered all our stuff, the pack and play and the da-da-da, and hit the road and just kind of made it work. And she, Hollis, really hated being in her car seat. There was a lot of screaming and, you know, and eventually after the first week, she, you know, just when it was time to come home. No, you know, then she'd settled into it. And yeah, it sounds like torture, doesn't it? And we forced her. We forced her in this van. And so we just, you know, we just took her. We just made it work. We'd check into the hotel, then it, you know, da-da-da. And I mean, crazy. I was still breastfeeding and everything.
Well, how do you do that backstage or in the van, or how do you even find the time or make the routine within
that? Oh, it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah, it's ridiculous. You set up the pack and play in the backstage.
Can you describe what the pack and play is here?
Okay, so it's the portable. It's a little portable cage. You know that it sets up. It's got 4 sides on it. You know, and little kids they can play in the bottom, or they stand up and they peek their little heads over. But yeah, it's just like a little portable, I don't even know, a little portable pen.
It's a playpen. I think that's what we
like
call them.
Yeah, I guess Pack and Play was probably a brand, you know.
I love
anyway, so we would.
I want one.
It was great because, well, you know, backstage it's filthy. And sometimes it's, you know, it's really small. And we'd set her up back there, and sometimes she would be at the hotel, but a lot of times she was backstage with us. I'd feed her, and I'd run up, play, and come back down, and maybe she'd be sleeping. And I mean, it was kind of chaos. Like I said, if we'd thought it through, we probably would have done it differently, but maybe not. Maybe it was the only way that it would work. And the first time I left her at home was, I think she was 14 months and we were going to Japan. I just thought, no, there's no way I'm going to take an infant. Well, she wasn't quite an infant, but, you know, she was 14 months. There's no way I'm going to take her to Japan, even though it was a really quick trip. It was only 5 or 6 days. So I actually weaned her, and I have a really good friend that she stayed with, and she stayed at home. It was really, really hard.
Do you find that when you got up on stage and, like, that bond, disconnecting that bond for the first time is potent? Does it enter into the way you play or think about things?
You know, sometimes, I don't know, and maybe Sharon can talk about this too, but when you get on stage, there's kind of a separation, mm-hmm. I think, from what's going on. You know, I mean, sure, if I'd thought about it, I would have longed for her, but I don't know. There's kind of an amazing thing that problems, at least for me, sometimes problems kind of just go away for at least that amount of time, and worries, because you're really focused on the show and the performance.
Do you find that, Sharon? Because sometimes it's exactly the opposite. Sometimes for some people, it's like you're in a busy mood. You're going to bring it right into the music. Mm-hmm. But
I guess it depends on like the emotion of the song and what you're going through that day. But most of the time, if it's something different than what you're experiencing, that helps you escape it. But I wonder, though, if you're feeling an emotion that ties in with the song that you have to perform, if it sometimes makes it more emotional. And there may be some songs that you have written in the past that had was pre-family, mm-hmm. but maybe there have been songs that now being away, having kids, being more personal in the family center, maybe they strike closer to home if you miss them.
Yeah, you're right. And every once in a while, we'll bring up a song and it'll bring back a feeling or a thought. And I don't know, sometimes I guess at this point, I kind of relish those moments, you know, because it might bring me back to an earlier time that was when the kids were just young and sweet, and you know they did what they were told. No, not quite.
I don't know. I guess the main reason why I had a handful of reasons that I wanted to talk to you, that I was excited to talk to you, but the number one thing I'm very curious about is that, you know, I'm in my 30s and thinking about having a family. My mm-hmm. music is the center of my world. And it's not really talked about, I don't feel like, enough in the music industry, but it's harder for a woman to have a child on the road than a man, because there are like roles already in place, and it's easier for the woman to stay at home. Not easier, but it's the natural thing to do. But what if you are the touring musician involved? I'm very curious in how that works, how that dynamic works, especially as partners on the road, mm-hmm. and finding that creative space as well as feeling like a positive role model and pursuing it. I'm curious about how you find that balance.
Well, I think I was just really fortunate that Alan was there, so it was a partnership. I have an amazing picture of when Hollis was just starting to walk, and I think we're on tour on backstage, and she's standing there, and you see literally 5 sets of hands around her, everybody waiting to catch her. And that, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. It's just, aww. I mean, such a sweet moment. And everybody just kind of stepped up. And I mean, she was, for on tour, she was everybody's baby. It was really, really sweet.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, so it was really, really hard. Like I said, it was really hard. And it's not anything you want to go into lightly. But I think if you're just motivated and dedicated, I know, you know, obviously it can be done. I mean, there's nothing super special. I'm not super mom by any means, but I made it work.
That sounds like super mom to me. I don't know.
It's not, though. It's not, really.
But having your partner as part of the package there, so to speak, is, I think what you're saying, made it a little easier and more possible.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, he definitely stood up and, you know, or stepped up, I should say. And yeah, well, you have to. Your partner's in this, and it's kind of, you don't have a choice. You know, you do what you have to do.
Right.
I remember when my son was born, so much of my perception of things changed, so that the kind of music I would listen to completely changed. Like, I didn't like listening to loud music around the house, abrasive things, just, you know, free jazz was certainly out, you know. There was just something about, I wanted harmony and beauty. When I would go to a nightclub, I'd just think of it as, God, this is really disgusting and scuzzy. And I'm imagining you with this 10-month-old being in a nightclub. You talk about the play and park or whatever it's going to pack and play. And I see that. But is there anything that shifted for you after having a child, walking into these dingy clubs? You sort of said how the floor was grubby, but was there anything more visceral?
Well, it was a realization. You know, not that I wasn't aware of my surroundings before, but you do. You start looking at things a little more closely. And I really didn't, there wasn't anything I could do. I was kind of forced to bring her into this environment. Yeah, it was definitely eye-opening and made me really appreciate not being in the dingy bars when I didn't have to be. But I know you're right about the music. You want to keep it. You want to keep a nice, sedate, kind of home, you know, a homey feeling. And, I mean, the music that we played when we rehearsed and whatnot, she was always there. And I remember one show in Seattle. It was Bumper Shoot, I think. We were playing the Opera House. And we were on stage, and the audience was all dark in the audience. The lights were down. And my friend was watching her to the side of the stage, and she just let her go. And Hollis just wandered onto the stage because she couldn't, you know, the audience was silent. She didn't know anybody was there. And she just came out and put her arm around my leg, aww, you know, and you can imagine. It was like, oh, aww, you know, you could hear it. And then as soon as the song was over, the applause, and she was just shocked. You know, the lights came up in the house, and she's like, oh my gosh, what is going on? You know, that little moments like that, where they're just unforgettable.
So now she is 15, is that right?
She is 15, yeah.
How do you talk to your kids about what you do in music, and how do they feel about what you do, and what is their connection to music outside of you as their mother?
They both seem to really love music. Hollis is playing guitar, and Cyrus is playing drums.
Yes.
Nice. You know, yeah, it's really great because Alan is so good at getting them together to play. You know, and it's a little family affair down there. You know, they each have their own thing, and that the music that they listen to, and I'm really so happy that it's kind of taken its own course for them. And I think that might be the case. You know, if you have musical parents, you end up kind of going your own direction a little bit and finding your own thing, maybe just not necessarily in spite of them, but maybe in a way. But they know that, well, so before I came here today, I said, Hollis, what are your ideas on, you know, what would you say if somebody asked you, what do you think about your mom and dad going on tour? Or your mom going on tour? And she said, well, she's got to work. You know, and that was her comment. She's got to work. She's going to work. And
that's so great.
So they're getting a completely different experience. I don't know. I think they're really fortunate. And when we were in China, actually, if somebody started to kind of grumble a little bit, you know, I just tapped them and was like, hey, you're in China. You know, you're in China. I probably said that 5 times. Hey, you're in China. You know, pick it up. But I think they appreciate the experiences they've had.
If one of them, or Hollis or Cyrus, said to you, I think I'm going to be a musician, meaning for their life's work, what do you think?
I'd be real honest with them and tell them it was a lot of hard work. And I think that we've been, you know, the career that we've been able to have is pretty rare. And so I would probably tell him that if you want to do this, great, do it, try it, but it's going to be a lot of hard work and there's going to be a lot of heartbreak. But I think it's worth it. Would you agree, Sharon?
I would. It's not getting any easier, that's for sure. I have, you know, I think by the time they are adults, I don't know about the physical world of music, so that is a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. And touring is getting much harder. There's a lot more competition to even get a venue for even established bands booking over a year out now at certain venues. It's really tough, and it's not getting easier. And I love music, but I'm very curious about what's going to happen over the next 10 years with me, you know, having a real life and working on music and pursuing it as a career and a passion.
Sharon, do you think now that she's got close to two teenagers, certainly grown children, and she's done this, in your thinking of thinkings and having asked the questions about what it was like, can you see yourself doing it?
Well, for me, it's just different. You know, I think that I would have to completely rearrange the group of people I tour with. I would have to cut it down. I would have to find other means of income in order to not tour 9 months out of the year. That's scary, but, you know, music is what I do, so I don't really know. I'm exploring alternatives right now so I can start thinking about the realities of having a family. And it's kind of scary, but I want to do it, and I've only known this life for the last 10 years, so I'm curious how people make it work. It's nice to hear that you figure it out. Everyone says it, no matter what they do, no matter what the living situation, their work situation, everybody figures it out. Like, most people just figure it out, even if it's tough, right?
Yeah, you do. And, you know, I was 32 when I had Hollis, you know, so pretty close to your age. So I felt like I was, you know, mature enough, and we had really good people. I think that is the key. If you're going to attempt this, you do have to have really good people that you trust. And, you know, people will.
Can you be more specific what you mean by good people you can trust? Like, it's not just, obviously, not just having a really great guitar player and a bass player, but what are the qualities? What are you thinking of it when you say that?
Well, I think with people, you can get a sense of if they're a giving or a selfless person.
Gotcha.
I mean, as a mom, and I don't consider myself a real selfless. I was married 10 years. We were married 10 years before we had children. And I kind of considered myself selfish. I did, you know, I was just doing what I wanted to do. We would, you know, we were touring however we wanted and wasn't taking anybody else into consideration. And so I was forced, you know, I was kind of forced to look in myself and find that capacity to care for somebody more than I cared for myself. And it's kind of amazing when you do find that. The person we got, our nanny, was a good friend of ours. And this was new to him. He'd never done that before. I mean, he was going on tour, watching a baby. I mean, how hard is that? I met, you know, a guy. But we just had faith in him. And
what did that ad look like?
I know. And who's crazy enough to sign up for that? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wish I had a definite, specific answer. Like, how do you make this work? But everybody's situation is different. But I know that, you know, we did it. And if we could do it, I have faith in you.
That's awesome.
And they don't go to school for like 5 or 6 years. So you got a long time.
Right. Oh, yeah, I got a long time.
A long time before you have to take 9 months off.
It'll be a big writing period for me.
There you go. It'll be your opera.
Like, really, how quiet can I get?
Oh, so sweet. Thanks, all.
Thanks for making it all work, and congrats on the new record. It's so great.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely. I'm excited to see you guys in September.
Okay, good. We'll see you. Are you going to be?
I'll be there.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And I'll see you when you come to D.C.
Okay, perfect.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, all. Sharon Van Etten and Mimi Parker. The new album from Low is called Ones and Sixes. You can hear the entire album this week as part of our First Listen series on the NPR music site. Here's one of my favorite cuts from that record. It's called What Part of Me? From NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
What part of me don't you know? What part of me?